Welcome to the Gottesdienst Crowd, where we foster confessional integrity, liturgical preservation, and preaching that doesn't stink. We believe that the historic liturgy of the divine service is more than mere cobwebs of antiquity, but it is a true treasure of the church to be dusted off and brought down from her attic to be enjoyed. So let's get dusting.
Welcome back to the Gottesdienst Crowd. This is Jason Broughton, your host. Today, we have with us special guest, Bart Day. He is a pastor in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod on the roster of pastors for that church body. But most recently, the past 5 years, he has served as president and CEO of the Lutheran Church Extension Fund. Welcome, Bart.
Thank you, Jason. It's great to be with you today.
Yeah, it's good to have you. We've been trying to get this sorted for the past, probably 5 months. And either I've had something, you've had something, so finally we're able to get it done. So thanks for your time.
Yeah, it's great to finally be able to take the time and sit down and talk.
So what I wanted to chat with you about is when you came on board at the Lutheran Church Extension Fund, you entered into a Master of Business Administration program at Washington University. And I just have been curious about, you know, how can we as the church plunder the Egyptians of the business world and take what they have to offer in terms of leadership training, being a leader yourself, strategy and tactics in getting their business into the front and center of people's minds and being perhaps not so much profitable, but being mindful of the bottom line that we have, we do not have an endless store of resources and we need to be good stewards of those resources to get, so to speak, the most bang for your buck. So marketing, looking at just how we take the mission that Jesus has given us, and I don't want to say tailor it, but see what is it that our community needs in its particular place and particular time to reach out with the gospel for those people at that place and at that time. So that's what I want to talk with you about. And maybe you can just begin by saying how you ended up, as the president and CEO of LCEF and entering in that MBA program.
Sure. Well, first, that is a lot to talk about and probably can fill up a lot of time. But yeah, so my journey from the parish to Synod Inc. to LCEF, I joke a lot, Jason, that the majority of my 25 years in ministry has been spent doing things that the seminary did not train me and did not prepare me to do. Yeah. I say that jokingly because at the foundation and the anchor what the seminary prepared me to do has served me very, very well. But I've certainly been led beyond that. That happened early on when I was in the parish at Memorial in Houston, and I got moved over into the headmaster role and ended up doing a lot more administrative stuff at the school. During those early years at Memorial, we were doing a lot of international work with War Relief and Human Care. And this rather bombastic fellow named Matt Harrison, and we're working on some RSOs with him. And so after his election in 2010, then I was asked to come and consider some positions at the LCMS, which I eventually did, and was there to be a part of National Mission, Office of National Mission, as Synod was being restructured. That was a great experience. And then after 6 years there, I was asked by the board of directors of LCF to come and work at LCF. And I think I landed here specifically, not because of banking and financial skills or those sort of hard business skills that you kind of opened talking about, but because they wanted somebody that was a pastor and was very mindful of the mission of the church to also be in leadership at LCF to assure that the mission and engaging the community for the sake of the gospel was actually integral to the life at LCEF. So that was sort of my short answer path to getting to LCEF. And you're right, as soon as I got here or shortly thereafter, I had been involved in an MBA program before at Northwestern when I was at Synod. Mm-hmm. That was kind of on and off again was able then to kind of take that up full time at Wash U here in St. Louis. Chose Wash U quite intentionally. It's a very well-known school. Olin Business School is considered to be a high caliber MBA program. They call it value-based and data-driven. So both a lot of emphasis on hard skills, core competencies around business, but then also a lot of emphasis on soft skills, the values, the competencies that are needed to actually sort of execute on a business plan, develop people, develop leaders, and those type of things. So I found the Wash U experience to be quite good. It was a lot to do while also serving as president and CEO, but I found it very applicable. Would also just note, Jason, that you know you can do full-time MBA or part-time or executive. I did executive and did that quite intentionally, not only the way the program was structured, but because executive MBAs are typically tailored for people who are active professionals who are moving towards C-suite positions in their organizations if they're not already there. Mm-hmm. So there was just a really rich experience with people in the class that were already business professionals that just brought a very different dynamic to kind of the classroom learning because of where they were in their professional careers.
Yeah. So as you were going through this program then, I mean, kind of looking back, is there anything that kind of popped out within the kind of realm of leadership training and, I mean, even some of the hard data things, as well as marketing and strategy that you thought to yourself, man, I wish I knew this, not just for my previous places that I've already served that I knew I wasn't kind of equipped to do and I was kind of learning on the fly, but just as a general kind of run-of-the-mill average Missouri Synod pastor, were there things that popped out like, well, you know, that would have been really helpful to know? I mean, not that... I don't want to point the finger because the seminary can't do everything, right? I mean, right. There has to be some things that it's like you got to expect they're not going to be able to give you not only someone with an MDiv, but also an MBA. Right. It's just too much. But what are some things, and maybe we can even kind of spitball on in terms of what kind of just resources there might be out there, you know, later on in the episode that can help you beef up, you know, on your own if you're not going to actually get an MBA.
Right. So those hard skill classes I found to be very, very useful. So things like strategic cost accounting or managerial economics or corporate financial management. Mm-hmm. I mean, being able as a parish pastor to just be able to read the congregation's budget and a balance sheet and a P&L and know what this stuff actually means. I mean, hopefully your congregation is blessed with lay people that are super talented and they help do that. Mm-hmm. But people still expect the pastor to be able to, I think, speak intelligently about these things, have their handle around the finances of the congregation and just kind of how the operation is managed. Mm-hmm. So those sort of hard skills, I think, you know, those things very much, I wish I would have had more of that academic training early on. I was blessed when I took over leadership at the school at Memorial that I had really great lay people that were doing that. I had a business manager, but that was sort of, you know, sink or swim. I mean, I was immediately immersed in having to oversee part of the financial responsibility of the school, which mm-hmm. there at that time was having some significant challenges. And there was sort of a plan to kind of right the financial ship. So those hard business skills, I think, are very useful to pastors or other rostered church workers who are serving in leadership roles, just so that they understand basic finance and accounting. Some of that may even be kind of HR type things or marketing, and how they share that story. So I do think those things are significant. Can you manage a business? Because many of our churches, certainly schools, agencies, and institutions, they are non-for-profit, but they are corporate businesses. You know that well, Jason, and some mm-hmm. of them are quite large, and they must be managed well. And you can't use Jesus as an excuse for not being able to run the enterprise. And again, many congregations are blessed by lay people who can do that. But I think the more the pastor is at least aware and is able to help support that and speak into those things, it certainly, I think, is an improvement in the life of in the overall life of the ministry and maybe captures some opportunities. Now, on the other side of that, this whole piece around not managing people, because I don't think you manage people. I think you actually develop people and you lead people. So these soft skills, these competencies, I mean, WashU, you know, I read a million case studies, you know, but they were great. I mean, a lot of great stuff for critical thinking and how you coach and develop people, but stuff around really how you negotiate or conflict management. We had classes on, certainly on marketing and consumer focus and what that means, but creative thinking, leadership development. We had classes on growth and sustainability. And then I know these are buzzwords, but really on innovation and entrepreneurial leadership. How are you raising up people that are developing new products or services that are needed? And they're actually new products and services that are needed within the life of the church.
Yeah.
Understanding who your community is around you and how you engage them, using first article gifts that the Lord has given us. So, yeah, I think both a lot of good hard skills through an MBA program that serve pastors and church workers well, certainly those soft skills and capacities around developing people are significant.
So what about just like being able to take a look at your strategy within a particular spot? I mean, did you find that helpful in your training, or was that already kind of set for you?
Maybe say a little bit more about what you mean, just sort of setting a strategy within your own context, like a business ministry strategy. Is that what you're kind of talking
about? Yeah, kind of something like that where, all right, so we've been blessed with these kind of funds and I don't want to in any way, you know, we're Gottesdienst, disparage what happens on Sunday morning. But sometimes, you know, we let our theology be the excuse for our inaction instead of the reason for our action. And so say we've been blessed with certain things but we're just kind of quiet about it. Like we bury our talent in the ground instead of finding a way within our community to take unrighteous wealth for the benefit of the kingdom. Does that make sense?
How many
congregations that perhaps are not struggling financially, but struggling in kind of human resources, people in the pews are just kind of like looking around like, well, we can just exist and hang on instead of, well, maybe we could actually do something. Is there a way in which the kind of strategy and tactics that are taught in MBA, or maybe I'm assuming it is taught, would be helpful for clergy and laity in the church and to begin thinking? I'm reticent to say to be thinking about the church as a business, but I think you know what I mean.
Yeah. So I don't think you should think of the church as a business. And I'm going to make, you know, just sort of my personal thanks to Gottesdienst. You know, I've been subscribing to that magazine since the early 90s. I mean, a liturgical life was part of my study at seminary and went on to Notre Dame and was able to do some great stuff in liturgical studies there and was blessed to go to Westfield House and stay with Brian Spinks and others. So I'm all down with the liturgical life. I like what you say, though, that liturgical life and the Eucharist is the heart of our life and faith, and what's happening in the divine service is not the end, but that is compelling us and pushing us out into the world to use our vocations to serve in all of those stations of life. And I think to leverage the first article gifts that God gave us, some of that, which is running the business side of ministries and being innovative and entrepreneurial and leaning into hard skills, soft skills of the business world to actually further the mission and engage the community around you. So I do think that MBA programs or even just programs in leadership development can really help churches and church workers think differently about their vocation and their stations and how they are engaging those communities with the gospel mm-hmm. so that those people are in the divine service on Sunday morning and are fully living out their faith in those vocations.
Yeah.
I was going to say this earlier when you were talking, I liked your idea about, you know, you're talking about plundering early on.
That's the Gottesdienst way, Bart.
Hey, look, that's good. But, you know, one of the things that I think has to be said here, because, look, I'm all for, I think we need more church workers, particularly to serve like agencies and institutions of the church to go forward and do some of these things. This is kind of my anecdotal thing. You know, when I graduated 25 years ago from the SEM, you know, we talked about how on the roster at that time, Jason, we had all these guys in the parish, like had PhDs in theology. We had the dearth of these people. And we had all these people that were sort of had been intentionally developed for leadership.
Yeah.
Those people aren't out there anymore. We don't have a dearth of anything. We don't have anybody encouraging the best and brightest church workers to get MBAs or get PhDs in leadership or do advanced degrees in higher education or go to law school and get a JD or whatever. Yeah. I think we used to really intentionally develop people to serve the institutions and agencies and the church and the broader church. So I think sometimes when we look around and say, well, we can't find anybody who can lead X, whatever the organization or entity or university is, I don't know that we're really intentional of kind of raising up people. So while I think we should be doing more of that, and I think there are plenty of clergy that have done those things, but I think there could be more. The other thing, if you want to plunder the world, man, we should actually cut laity loose in our congregations to actually use their God-given secular vocations in service to the church. Mm. And I think a lot of times we do not do that. And in fact, I think you can talk to some laity around the church who are very dynamic businessmen and women. They have hard skills, soft skills. They're doing this stuff in their daily life, and they don't believe the church wants it or needs it or would appreciate it or would value them actually using those gifts that they have, their vocation, in service to the church. And so part of this, I think, is in that realm of work in the church, we should lift up the laity in our congregation and tell them that their vocation has a station to be used in the church too.
Yeah.
And their role is not just to proclaim the gospel, although they're doing that in their neighborhoods and in their families and in the workplace. But we need their skills to be used in the church. And that's part of the way I think you can plunder. So we need to raise up church workers in this area, but we also need to do a lot better job teaching Luther's doctrine of vocation. And the glorious freedom there is in that, and then really encourage the lay people to use those gifts in service to the church.
I've talked to a couple of people, and we're not really training them how to be Christian in those vocations either, right? What does a Christian do in this spot? How does the baptized live out their faith in the world that they find themselves in? We tend to kind of just say, okay, well, that's a vocation, and so you're serving God by what you're doing. But we don't actually then help them apply the scriptures to the tasks that they have at hand in those areas either. And really, Sunday morning just becomes I get my get out of jail free card instead of actually receiving the forgiveness of sins for a particular reason, not just way in the future for our eternal life in heaven, but even for our future life now, like
right.
the next second. So,
right. Well, you had asked actually about kind of setting the strategy in your local place. So
yeah.
I think that's important. I think far too often we're not intentional, Jason, about the actual strategy, or we're not intentional about recognizing that, you know, where I served in Houston, Texas, in the Galleria, in one of the most ethnically diverse cities, and, you know, even in our neighborhood, that's not the same as where you serve. Mm-mm. And being realistic about and knowing who is my neighbor, what is happening in my area, who has God called me to serve in this place, and having a strategy in that location that may look very different based on the location and demographic and culture and the surrounding and any number of things, but also the people who are in my congregation and the resources that we have, which are maybe not the same as what you have or the church down the road. I think really taking inventory of those things, understanding the gifts and the talents that God has given us, financial, people, spiritual, and otherwise, that is a unique strategy, and it has to be done intentionally. And I understand that a lot of pastors don't like to do that stuff and think it's silly and sometimes not even Lutheran. And I understand that people can run off and get all kinds of screwball theology mucked up in first article things and not be helpful. But there is a real place, I think, for Lutherans to do this in a very clear theological way and in a very intentional way and have clear strategies and actual operational objectives. And, you know, you can have your OKRs, you can have your objectives and key results, you know, great books like John Doerr, Measure What Matters. We can talk about all kinds of books that I think pastors should read later. But we should be intentional about that. And there are resources out there in the church. I'm not here to, you know, to just wave the flag for LCF today, but we pay an awful lot of money to have access to Mission Insight. And Mission Insight is available for free to any congregation or ministry in the Synod. And we can skin your neighborhood and that cat any number of ways by zip codes or streets and give you an awful lot of information about who is around you. And then LCF even offers processes to come in and work with congregations to actually say, what is the strategic plan here? What does that look like?
Yeah.
Office of National Mission, when I served over there, Mark Wood created modules within Revitality, which do the same thing. I mean, helping congregations think through strategic planning that's very intentional and then assuring that our resources are aligned, it is a very, very good thing for congregations to do. Otherwise, they become lethargic or they miss opportunities or, you know, the wheels can come off the bus because nobody is kind of minding the basic business of running the church.
Yeah. So you mentioned a couple terms like innovation and being entrepreneurial. And I think you even said, you know, I know those are buzzwords. So they do carry some like negative freight or negative connotations to them. In like in your mind, how should we understand those terms within the framework of the church itself? And I don't want to say baptize them, but yeah, plunder that to not limit ourselves to it, because it seems to me we often limit ourselves to what we always have known instead of, you know, this is always how it has been. And like, that's the big joke with Lutheran churches, right? This is always how it is. So how should we understand innovation and entrepreneurial spirits?
Well, I don't disagree that they can be unhelpful terms when talking about the doctrine and life of the church. The Lord Jesus has given us everything that we need. We have a clear confession. We have a clear Lutheran identity. So just, you know, innovating or changing because, you know, we think that doctrine or life needs to be improved in the church is not helpful. And I know there have been conferences out there. I don't even know if the conference is still around, Jason. It was like Change or Die, I think was the title of one. And it was talking to the church and people were all shocked why people got all upset about that. It's kind of like, well, you know, that's not a helpful take. But I think these terms, again, when they're used in not doctrine and practice in the life of the church, but how the church is engaging the world around them. And I'm talking kind of directly, like a congregation engaging its community. Something innovative to a Lutheran parish is probably just something new that they've not done before. But I don't know, even when I think, Jason, about innovative things that congregations have done, none of it would qualify as actually cutting edge in the business world, right? I mean, nobody's like really creating something brand new. But a congregation that, you know, looked around their neighborhood in Colorado that LCF worked with, and they had a large homeless population, and they started doing, you know, some food stuff out of their church for them. And then as they kind of got to know these people, I mean, actually we're sitting down with them like at the meals, not just kind of feeding them and, you know, passing them out the door. Uh-huh. They find out that, you know, these people, one of the basic things they really don't have is a place to like clean up. And if you live on the street all the time, like you don't get a shower, like hardly ever. Uh-huh. And so they wanted to kind of address that need. So they purchased a shower trailer, and they could actually go to these like homeless camps and actually set up shop and have like five showers and like help these folks like clean up. I mean, I would call that an innovative thing. It's not like other people don't do shower trailers, but for that congregation in that place, it was something quite innovative or even maybe entrepreneurial for them to do. It was very much kind of outside their comfort zone, outside the box, not anything that they would have just done to kind of serve the people who were normally coming into the pew, but in order to engage their community with the gospel, this was a human need that was being addressed while the gospel was also being applied. So for me, Jason, a lot of the innovative things have to do with human care. Mm-hmm. I know this is a challenging thing in the LCMS too. President Harrison, some of the greatest things he's done for the church in the last 20 years is sort of raise up a clear Lutheran theology around mercy. And I know this is all screwed up in our inter-Lutheran intersections. In my role across the street, I was on plenty of pan-Lutheran intersections where people believed that the gospel itself was, you know, taking care of the poor or feeding the hungry or whatever. Yeah.
Social justice, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that is not the gospel. We do those things because we're compelled by the gospel, and we do those things so we can actually proclaim the gospel of Jesus like into their ears. Mm-hmm. It ain't just about giving the homeless guy a shower. It's about telling that homeless person about Jesus, because yeah, that's what he actually needs. But we can use those things, I think, maybe those mercy connections are innovative to the church, just in the way that it's addressing a human need. You've got crisis pregnancy, or, you know, sort of taking care of single moms and their kids need stuff. I mean, you've got Lutherans that are engaged in this stuff all over the place. I think for those congregations, they would think that it's pretty innovative. And I happen to think it's pretty cool too. It's a real live need in their community. So I think innovation for the sake of innovation, or just being entrepreneurial to drive the bottom line, is not why the church does these things. They do them to actually engage the community with the gospel and do something maybe a bit outside their comfort zone, or something that maybe they've never done in the past or never would have thought of doing until they actually looked at their community, created a plan, mm-hmm, and then stepped out, you know, boldly in faith and put some of their resources to work.
Yeah. So what kind of teaching was given in your MBA program that helped you deal with the difference between, say, like urgency and emergency? It seems to me like our churches have a sense of urgency, and they translate that into kind of a flurry of emergency activity that is unfocused and just kind of trying to do whatever they can. And it leaves a sense of a lack of confidence And so you have that on the one hand, and on the other hand, you just kind of have the throw up your hands and say, well, you know, we're here, so people will find us. Did your program go into, like, so dealing with actual urgent things in the business world and how to kind of face those things with real tools that will kind of unveil what the issues are so that you can actually be dealing with those things?
Yes. So the urgency that turns into an emergency is because there's no intentionality.
Yeah.
And so the urgency should compel people to be very, what you said earlier, strategic and very, very intentional. And in the church, that means we have to stop having this kind of overarching idea of scarcity. Like, we don't have anything, right? Like, I got nothing left. And actually start from the idea of, like, it's like overabundance and we have plenty. Like, in fact, Jesus has assured us that we have everything we need to do the work that we have set before us. So there's not a scarcity. There's not an emergency. I don't need to kind of snap my finger and tell you that all these people are going to hell, right? Mm-hmm. The Lord has all of his numbers sealed, right? But he's certainly given us work to do. And so I think it's kind of nice when there's some urgency in congregations. I think many of them are probably too complacent. But if it is the urgency to emergency, you got to be intentional. And I would say my MBA certainly taught that. You know, you have to have people that can step back in an emergency and not just start flailing around like a drowning man, because all you're going to do is drown a few more people with you, because you're just start grab a hold of people. Yeah. And you're just going to pull them down. Somebody has to be able to step kind of out of the morass and say, who are we? What have we been called to do? What resources do we have? We can't boil the entire ocean, right? We can only do one or two things, and we should do them exceedingly well. And let's be very intentional about things for in the church that actually, you know, support the mission and actually grow the church's opportunity to proclaim the gospel. And let's be very intentional. So I do think that some of the coursework and certainly the conversations in the class were in that direction. The other thing I found interesting in all this, Jason, in my MBA, was sort of that dynamic between the profit and nonprofit world. Because you would think that, you know, going to Olin at Wash U, this was pretty just for-profit, you know, Fortune 500, all about the bottom line. Like, this is all just about returning value to shareholder, and like, we'll just cut off everybody's head along the way. I mean, you talk about plunder, like, nobody cares about anybody. It doesn't matter. Doesn't matter how we do it, as long as we get it done and return investor shareholder revenue, then we are all good. And I was amazed at how hypersensitive Olin was to not only what was done, but why things were done, and particularly around workplace culture and environment and how you have to develop people and care for people, how you need to actually align people with the kind of mission and values of an organization, even a secular organization. They all have mission and core values. And you have to find people that actually believe in the cause to be a part of that. So I think in the nonprofit world, we have to lean into that all the more. And again, maybe that goes back to freeing the laity in some of these conversations. You know, Jason, when the congregation is in this urgency, moving to emergency and scarcity, is anybody part of the conversation other than just the pastor and the board of elders? I mean, who else is invited into that intentional conversation from the congregation to kind of set a plan? So I think there's tons of opportunity there for the church to be very faithful in its doctrine and in its life and in its confession, and be radically innovative and entrepreneurial in engaging the community and using the resources that God has given them. There is no scarcity in the church. We have everything. And maybe we don't have because we don't ask. And we don't actually show people a preferred vision for the future in this place, wherever that is, and whatever the organization is in the church, that people actually are excited about and they want to support. It's pretty hard to raise money, Jason. You know this from your time, I'm sure, at the seminary. I mean, it's pretty hard to raise money when it's just about, we need to raise money because we can't keep the lights on this week or next month. It's very different when it's, you know, we have this opportunity to do this really great thing in the future, but we're going to need resources to do it, and we have a plan. And wouldn't you like to be a part of seeing something happen here that's going to have a legacy long after we're in heaven with Jesus?
Yeah,
people get very excited about those kind of things. So I think pastors, for me, Jason, I think pastors have to be a part of those conversations, or at least they should be. And when they are in the life of the congregation, I know it's outside some people's comfort zone and it's not purely teaching and preaching about the sacramental life, but there is this other part of our life together that if the pastor can be engaged in that conversation, doesn't mean he has to lead, but if he can be really actively involved in that conversation and being a part of that intentional strategy, I think it has legs in the congregation, and it has probably opportunity for real success.
So it just sort of got me thinking about how talking about that scarcity mindset versus, you know, having not because we ask not, or not just even taking the time to see the plentiful gifts that the Lord has given us. My life in kind of the smaller, like it's probably average Missouri Synod congregation in rural Illinois. There is a sense that, like, you know, the business side of the church is different from the theological side of the church, and never the two shall meet. And it seems as though there has kind of been this sense among pastors that this is the case, and we've kind of allowed that kind of statement to stand, and so have shot ourselves in the foot in terms of being able to say, yes, they're different sides of the church, but theology touches everything, and God has stuff to say about everything that we do. And if we're not looking at what the Lord has actually revealed to us in His Word on how we should move forward on or handle finances or handle our personal finances or any of these other things, then we should expect scarcity, right?
Yeah, and that's typically what we get.
Yeah.
So yeah. The stewardship piece is, when I was at the SIM, probably your experience too. I mean, it wasn't like a taboo topic, but they're just stewardship and it just wasn't sort of holistically understood or taught or talked about. And so I think people went into the parish kind of groping, at least I did. Like you say, maybe it's two sides of the same coin, but it's kind of like the dirty side of the coin, right? Or the if you flip the coin, you hope that side don't come up, like the finance and the money and the stewardship part. Let's keep the Jesus side. But that's really short-sighted. And I think over the last 25 years, there have been some good things written. I mean, Nathan Metter and Heath Curtis's book that they did on stewardship. I mean, really this intersection of theology and stewardship and theology and the resources that God gives us and how we care for our neighbor and the church by stewarding those resources, I think has been clearer. So, the theology touches on all of these things. And if it's just sort of like stewardship Sunday or, I got to get up in the pulpit and preach about that thing again, it's never going to be well received, and it'll always be sort of an outlier, and we won't know what to do with the money, and we may think everything's scarcity and emergency and an urgency. And so, the church has been tremendously blessed. And so even taking inventory of what you have in your place, I'm president of a little congregation in St. Louis. We worship 100 people or less on a Sunday, love the congregation, a lot of great people, blessed with tremendous wealth. And I'm not talking just in the offering plate on Sunday morning, although people are very, very faithful stewards of what God's given them. But, a couple $1 million, like in endowment funds to support Lutheran education, elementary school through seminary, and monies to take care of expanding the church in the future and things. And so people want to support the church, want to support the mission, want to be involved. And even just the physical assets that congregations and churches have. So I'm not sure, Jason, that people even take an inventory of what they actually have and how blessed they truly are, because that's an intentional exercise too, that somebody needs to be looking at and minding the matter of the physical facility and the land and the property that churches have and the resources, financial and otherwise, that God has blessed them with. So, there's some huge opportunity there. And I think a significant role for the pastor to play in that part of the life of the congregation as well.
Yeah. So switching gears just a little bit, falling short of every single pastor in the Missouri Synod entering into some MBA program to kind of wade through this, what resources, kind of go-to places, can a pastor kind of begin some perhaps like bed time reading, you know, if they're focusing on other kinds of reading, just spending maybe 20 minutes a day going through some books to help them wrap their head around some of these concepts and ideas from the business world that they can then employ for the good of not only their own congregation, but the church at large.
Right. Well, one, I would hope that pastors are actually lifelong learners. I talked about doing all these things that like I was never trained to do, but I mean, I love jumping into this stuff and love learning. And so one, with the internet and even online classes and stuff, I mean, you can find a million, you can find free classes on accounting and finance and micro, macroeconomics. I mean, there are all kinds of webinars and stuff out there. I mean, you can just go surf around and find more than enough to fill up 20 minutes a day, even just on learning sort of the hard skills of business. And when you get into the soft skills stuff around leadership development and what's innovation and entrepreneurial leadership, again, there's so many free resources out there. Blogs kind of like yours that talk about these topics. I mean, there's just a plethora. If you want me to offer up a few books, I'll just tell you kind of what I've been reading again lately.
Yeah.
Some of this is stuff from my MBA, some of it kind of post MBA, and I've kind of got kind of three buckets of things that I'm reading on these days. One is I find economists to be fascinating, just intriguing people. One, because economists typically are brilliantly smart, particularly on the data side, but they also have a purview of the world as economists that, I don't know, I just find fascinating, these people. So there are two books. Well, I'll give you three. These are not new books, but ones that I think are really kind of interesting. The first one is called Thinking Fast and Slow by Daniel Kahneman. It's kind of around like psychological behavioral economics. The other one is Nudge, Richard Thaler. He's a Nobel laureate economist. And that Nudge is really about how we make decisions. You talked about marketing earlier. Marketing is, I thought it was just smoke and mirrors and tricks. That might be one definition. The worst case scenario is really how invasive and how manipulative marketing is in the world today. Mm-hmm. I mean, Jason, the amount of information that businesses have on us as individual people and how they market to us and they manipulate the way we make decisions and as customers, what we buy, that's amazing. And you talk about things we could plunder from the secular world in the church, not to use those things in devious ways for the sake of the gospel, but a book like Nudge will certainly cause people, I think, to think. And then there's another book called Freakonomics by Stephen Levitt and Stephen Dubner, which is kind of interesting. The one, though, that maybe would be fun for pastors to read, which is kind of on how you manage change or how you manage innovation, because a lot of people think about doing it and they think, well, I'd have no idea kind of how to do this. There's a great little bitty book called How Stella Saved the Farm. It's a very fun read, but it is about managing change and innovation and what that looks like, how you develop and how you bring people along with change. So the whole realm of organizational development and change management in an innovative environment where change is inevitable, how does one bring people along?
No, that's good. Is the application immediately accessible to the church world? Because sometimes I have read like things on strategy and, you know, in business, and I'm thinking, this is really interesting, but I don't even know how to begin to apply this to my world. Are there helps and aids for the clergy on that front? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And I feel your pain. I do agree that not all of these are immediately translatable, or you have to really think through it. And I don't know that there's any kind of Christian group out there, certainly not Lutherans that I know of, that are kind of doing that for you and kind of walking you through this. Maybe that's something that
the LCEF can put together.
That LCEF or some of the pastors with MBAs and pastors that have served, you know, in the business world prior. You know, we have some unbelievable second career pastors, I mean, that have served like in significant like C-suite roles of large corporations and have MBAs and beyond sort of in the secular world and did that very, very well. And they've been able to translate that. So, yeah, maybe that's something we need to stand up. Maybe we should start a podcast where we read some of these books and actually talk about how they get applied. So I do think a book like How Stella Saved the Farm, you know, you can kind of see that. Books like Nudge and Thinking Fast and Slow, maybe a little more challenging to do that with. The other thing that I've just been reading on at LCF recently is all this stuff on a continuous improvement. And we're working hard at LCF to just sort of advance people, process, and technology here. A lot of the ways LCF functions is sort of, you know, from decades gone by, and we're not high tech and in the digital space as much as we should be. And so all this stuff on continuous improvement and, you know, Toyota, all the lean process, Six Sigma lean, there's just a lot of cool stuff there too, particularly if you're leading a larger church or a church that has a school where there's this expectation of kind of continuous improvement or how your operations function in an efficient manner. Some of those books, The Machine That Changed the World, The Story of Toyota and Lean Production is really, really good. And then Measure What Matters is another book that's pretty cool. I mentioned that earlier, John Deere, but these objectives and key results, how you in your world, if you're managing people, are you actually measuring what matters? What are the outputs that you want? What does success look like? It's kind of like writing goals. You can talk about SMART goals and all these kind of things that are measurable and achievable. But do they actually get the desired result of the organization from the individuals who are putting in that time and effort? So but I think, Jason, maybe because I know still back to kind of like the higher level of just the pastor, I think in today's day and age, if I would just ask pastors stuff like this, do you understand what's really happening in the economic environment today? I mean, are you reading anything? Are you watching any financial shows on TV? Do you listen actually when Jerome Powell and the Fed talk? Do you understand what's happening with inflation? Do you understand how the Fed is managing money supply and regulating markets and changing interest rates? Because those things, I think, that are just happening in the world around us, like the flood of liquidity kind of from PPP money and all the rest. And I'm not talking about whether you want to be in bed with Caesar. I'm talking about what happens when you put that much liquidity into the economy. And people are talking about recession coming. The yield curve is inverted. I think it's helpful if workers in the church are engaged in those conversations, because your laity in the pew are, and those things affect your church. You talk about the scarcity view. The businessmen and women in your congregation know what's going on with the Fed and rising interest rates and what's going on with employers and employees right now and lack of people filling jobs, even though there's tons of jobs out there. These things do have collateral effect on the church and on the church's operation. And I think even on how people give. And we might say that theologically, those things, that shouldn't be the case. But I think pastors just understanding the economic environment, and of course, that goes beyond the United States. I mean, do you understand what's going on with petroleum reserves and what's going on with the war in Ukraine and supply chain issues? Do you understand economics and supply demand and what's happening with the whiplash and why prices are going up, and even just our economy and how it's knotted up with China and other people? I mean, I think those things are useful for people to be engaged in. You know, are you reading something on economics? Are you just looking at Yahoo Finance and just reading some stories to understand what's going on in the world? I think those things are helpful for people in the church to be aware of, because they are shaping the minds of our people that are sitting in the pews on Sunday morning. And it's driving some of their decision making.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems to me that, on the one hand, you know, the news when we grew up, it happened at like 5 to 6 o'clock and then at 10 to 11 o'clock at night. And now the news is all the time, every day, never stopping, right? I mean, I can remember even that the TV stopped working. You just get like this rainbow bars on the screen. But now it's, you know, 24/7, 365 days a year. So what's the balance there in, you know, as a businessman and then also a clergyman, what's the balance between saying, keeping an eye on what's going on in the world, but not losing sight of your own living room, your own dining room table, your own community, the own people in your pew?
Well, there certainly has to be a balance. And I would say that the larger macro view of the world should only be to help set some context for what's happened locally. And it will sort of trickle down. So I think, I do think having a broader view, I would caution everyone about spending too much time watching television or listening to blogs and podcasts and everything else. I mean, I think that there has to be some temperance of that. I mean, if you're completely inundated by all that stuff all the time, I don't know what you get done. But I think being educated in the broader world of what's going on, and you got to know that where you get that news, it's not very conservative, Jason. I mean, I read The Economist every week and try to read Bloomberg Business Week, and you know, they're all over the place. They're pretty leftist sometimes, but people are consuming that stuff. And there is a perspective sort of on the world and what's going on there economically and how that's impacting us. So, but I do think you got to distill it down to your dinner table and conversation with your family about what's happening in their lives and in the congregation's life and in the community in which you live. And because you're not called to serve just the whole world, you're called to those stations of life where you are. So, but I think you can have some pretty lively conversations around the dinner table with family about what's happening in the world and what that means for kind of the here and now and their response. I will say this, you know, I've got 6 kids. They're all starting to get a bit older now. So they're kind of from 7th grade to like 25. So I've got 1 gainfully employed and 3 that are grad school, college age, and a high school or an elementary school kid. They do have a different view of the world. They know a lot more about the world than I sometimes give them credit for. This generation is, I think, very concerned about the world and themselves, and they're also very desirous to make an impact on the world. And the thing that's maybe important to this conversation, Jason, is that at least my experience with my kids, who I think have been catechized well, been to Lutheran schools, you know, all their lives, some to college or at least up to college, they really expect that the church is engaged in the world and is actually doing some action and work in the world and actually engaging and taking up not only these theological conversations, but actual action in the world. And so they want to do things, and they want to see their church engaging the community around them. So, part of that probably goes back to that intentionality and strategic planning and knowing who your neighbor is. And then, you know, looking at the gifts the Lord has given you and putting them to work, whether you think it's innovative or not.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. We could probably talk about what this current generation or the upcoming generations are expecting for another hour. And I don't want to take that much of your time. Is there anything that, you know, since I'm a newbie, that I didn't ask you about that you think that a pastor should know about plundering the business world for the sake of the church?
I don't think so. I think just learning as much as you can, being faithful in the calling God's given you in your place, and maybe really leaning into your lay people who are in that world, and giving them the freedom to use those gifts in the congregation and beyond in your mission and work is, I think, a pretty important thing.
Yeah. Well, Bart, thanks for your time, and thanks for all the work you're doing at LCEF, and carry on, man.
Hey, thank you. This was a great conversation, and hopefully some of your listeners will appreciate. If anybody has follow-up, you know, comments or questions for me, I'm available anytime. You can get me at bart.day@lcf.org. I'm usually around.
Thanks so much, Bart. You take care.
Hey, thank you, Jason. Have a great day.